Kā te tēnā koutou katoa e te iwi e whakarongo mai nei Waimari e tātou. Kwa tarea e au te whakapātu ki tētahi o ngā tangata whenua o Ahitereiria ki Te Uru. Nā kuia tētahi o ngā tangata e pāngia ana e ngā ture kikino te kāwanatanga o Tony Abbott ki reira i tēnei wā ana ko rongo tātou i āna kōrero. Kāre rātou mo Te Utu I te nohonga o ngā tangata whenua o reira. And we're very lucky, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, we've got Cato on the line right now. Cato Muir. Cato, just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, which tribe you're from, which mob you're from, I suppose, in Australian speak, and whereabouts in the country you reside.
Okay, kia ora. Yes, so my name's Cato Muir. I live in a town called Leonora, which is, I know some of your listeners will know where Kalgoorlie is.
Oh, yeah.
We're 230 kilometres north of Kalgoorlie, so we're part of the Goldfields region of Western Australia, but my country is out in the desert. So my grandparents walked in out of the bush, and my mother back in the 1930s. Yeah, so we're Western Desert culture. A lot of our people still live in the remote, well, to white fellas it's remote, to us it's home, desert communities, and we continue to practice our, you know, traditional ceremonies and culture and all of those sort of things. And, yeah, basically continue to live on our tribal territory.
Has the new policy that the government has announced regarding subsidising lifestyles, has that had any stress or on the Indigenous community?
Absolutely. What is happening in the community is people are, because the government has not named any community. So we've got, in Western Australia, most of the population, the white population, live in Perth. So yeah. 70% of the population live between the coast and the Darling Scarp or the range. And that's of a similar population in New Zealand. So we're talking about 3 million people in Western Australia.
Yeah.
And outside of that, you have what is known as the Wheat Belt, southwest, so the farming, you know, the settled white settled farming areas. Then you have the Goldfields, where we come from, so a lot of the gold mining areas. And this area, by the way, is the last frontier in Australia. It was settled in the 1890s through to the 1930s. And then you have the Pilbara, which is iron ore mining, and the Kimberley, which all of those areas were settled quite early on with pastoral activity. Now, what is happening across the state is that there are about 3 or 4 or maybe about 6 major towns across the state, half a dozen smaller towns, and then the rest of the state is occupied by Aboriginal people, Aboriginal communities. So across these places do not appear on any maps, but across the Kimberley, for instance, I think there are 240 Aboriginal settlements. Across the rest of the state, we're talking, well, out just to the east of us, between Leonora and the West Australian border, is an area of land they call the Nyanyangara lands, or whitefellas just say the lands. Out there, you have the communities out there have been able to establish themselves as a local government area, and there's probably about 6 towns out there and maybe 12, 15 smaller settlements. Now, in those communities, that's where people kept coming off land from the traditional life right up until the 1980s. The last family came in out of the bush in 1986.
Oh, wow. And,
sorry?
Wow, that's quite late.
Yeah. No, you know, and as a child, I'm in my 40s, as a child, all of my elders were basically out of the bush. What they basically did, they, for various reasons, my elders had to move out during a period of drought and famine. And we settled, it was still in our territory, but settled around the towns and lived there for a period of time, probably about 30 years, between the 1930s to the 1960s. They lived on the still a semi-traditional life and on the pastoral stations. In the late 1960s, the government, up until that time, Aboriginal people were employed effectively as slaves. There were no wages or upkeep or anything like that.
Right.
And in 1968, about a year after the 1967 referendum, which led to Aboriginal people being citizens of Australia, they introduced the Aboriginal Pastoral Workers Award. And that effectively led to wide-scale sacking of Aboriginal people, so massive unemployment right across the country, and that led to a lot of people leaving the land at the time to move into the outskirts, into shanty towns, basically on the edges of town. Where I'm sitting right now in Leonora, we're on a Aboriginal Lands Trust block of land. We have about 8 or 9 houses here with my, whenua or family.
Yep.
And they were basically a relocated people already, having had to move from one location because of a mine in the 1980s. So in that history, people have been subjected to government policies and being moved around for the last, effectively 100 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's happening today is nothing new. It's just that we're very surprised that the government thinks that it can get away with forcibly relocating Aboriginal people from, their homeland.
It's a form of ethnic cleansing, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, it is. I put up a Facebook post a few days ago where I basically said this is a form of genocide. And I had a couple of white friends sort of say, that's a bit harsh. And then another mate of mine put the definition of genocide up. And I think white Australian government spend a lot of time in a bubble making decisions that they think are effective policy decisions, which only result in, undesired outcomes. This whole, Tony Abbott, he's a bit like old Prince Philip in a way, where he's got this foot and mouth disease. Yeah. And every time he opens his mouth, gets himself into trouble, which is not a good position for a politician to be in.
Yeah, well, Cato, why do you think that the government is doing this? Is this at the bequest of the mining companies, in your opinion, or what?
There is an agenda across Australia. It goes like this, and you guys would probably know and be familiar with it, although a lot of it might have happened, in about nearly a couple of generations ago, but it's all happening to us today.
Yeah.
And the agenda is one where at first contact, so with my people coming into contact for the first time, the main things they did was A, gave us clothes.
Yep.
B, asked us to stop walking around and hunting. And C, started to give us rations. And rations are essentially welfare.
Yeah.
And so the point of first contact was effectively to make Aboriginal people dependent on the European economic system. And that's been pushed for generations, the welfare dependency. And essentially that's to, in the early days was to stop us from hunting and needing cattle and, engaging in our traditional practices. And the pastoral industry's moved on, so now the big business out there is mining. And in the Northern Territory, for instance, the Aboriginal people own close to 50% of the land mass.
Yeah.
In Aboriginal land rights freehold title. During the John Howard regime, they came up with this idea called the intervention.
Ah, yes.
And, so that was based on, A, the mudslinging, which was to say, the Aboriginal people are all pedophiles and they're practicing, all their children, women and children are at risk, etc. Despite 10 years later and $1 billion later in government resources, I think they only picked up one boy who's having a relationship with his girlfriend, and technically he was, practicing pedophilia.
Yeah.
But what the real agenda was to force a lot of those communities into a 99-year lease arrangement with the government.
Ah, right.
And therefore get access to their land. And there are a number of reports, you can see the picture build up over time, a Reeves report which talked about unlocking the potential of the reserve, because in economic terms, essentially, the Northern Territory is 40% locked away from the rest of Australia because it's on Aboriginal land.
Wow.
The flip side of that, though, is that the laws, the legislation that are in place, specifically prevent Aboriginal people from undertaking commercial activities on their land.
Mm.
And so that's in the Land Rights Act. You transfer that across to the Native Title Act, which is a federal legislation across all of Australia. There are particular parts of the legislation that says the Aboriginal people are not allowed to trade in resources, they're not allowed to engage in commercial activity as a traditional cultural right. And as you guys know, and and you're pretty much in the same boat as us, we had a well-developed, quite sophisticated economy a long time before the whitefellas ever came.
Yeah.
And even some parts of the northern Australia, they were engaging in trade with Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
For something like 600 years before the whitefellas ever showed up.
Yeah.
So the real agenda here is, A, to continue to keep Aboriginal people dependent and subjugated. If you want evidence on that, you just look at the prison population, where 70% of prisoners in Western Australia are Aboriginal.
What?
There are actual jails that they identify as Aboriginal prisons.
Just going on that, what is the percentage of the population that is Aboriginal, that is Indigenous?
Close to 1.5%.
1.5%, and most of the jails, 70%, are filled with Indigenous people.
Yeah.
What does that tell? What does that tell you, listeners?
Well, we had a fellow called Lieutenant General John Sanderson, who at one stage was the commander of the Australian Armed Forces.
Right.
And the SAS. He did a special report for the state government. They employed him as the special consultant on Aboriginal affairs. He did a report, and I was at one of his workshops where he basically put it on the table and he said, well, if this were the case anywhere else in the world, you would think that there was a state of civil war.
Mm.
Between, the Indigenous population and the settler population. So that's where a lot of our men are, basically, in jail. And then it's not true that the majority live in the bush. So, there's probably about 20,000-30,000 Aboriginal people living in Perth and surrounding.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Yungar people.
How many people live in the bush now?
Well, if you see, 70% of the state population are up in between the river and the hills, or the coast and the hills in Perth.
Yeah.
That's probably, about 2 million. In this region, I'm just thinking, Kalgoorlie's about 40,000 people, of which the Aboriginal population is close to 10%. And so as you get into more isolated parts of the state, the Aboriginal population becomes the majority.
Ah, right, okay, yep.
Yeah, and so the agenda here is really to clear the land to make it available for resource development.
Mm.
So all the minerals, the new mineral fields, the uranium deposits, all those sort of things are out in the bush. One community in the Goldfields region that has already been shut down is a community called Kunana. And the history of those people, I'll just give your listeners a quick snapshot so they understand where we're coming from. In the 1950s, the British government did atomic bomb tests in Australia.
Yeah.
And the government went out and everyone they could find, and they didn't get everyone, but everyone they could find, they relocated them to the settlements, which later became missions.
Right, yeah. Sounds familiar.
And one of these settlements was the Kundalee Mission, where the people lived from the 1950s through to the 1980s. During that time, it ran out of water, you know, in terms of its supply. And so they relocated everybody there in the 1980s down to this place called Kunana. And Kunana was a lot closer to Kalgoorlie. And we're talking, you know, full-blown tribal people, many of whom don't speak English or have much to do with whitefellas at all. And at Kunana, between the 1980s to the 1990s, a lot of the older people went back out to their core homeland at a community called Dundundara and re-established, you know, settlements out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the young people ended up drifting into town, living on the streets, getting into alcohol, drugs, violence, jail, death, all those things. And then along comes about 5 or 6 years ago, no, 4 years ago, the state government, new state government at the time, announced that it will open up Western Australia for uranium mining.
Ah, right.
And near Kunana is a uranium deposit known as Mulga Rock.
Yeah.
And in that last 3 years, we essentially see this community shut down. All the houses are still there. It's like a ghost town. And everyone has moved out. So that's just one example. Right across the state in the last few years, there are three examples, big main examples of closing communities. One was part of that so-called paedophile crackdown, which I think in this case you did have a ring of paedophiles in the community at a place called Umbulgari.
Right.
In the Kimberley.
Yeah.
And that's where they just basically stopped delivering the services, cutting off the water, cutting off the power.
Bloody hell.
And forcing everyone to move out.
And
so that's already happened, yeah?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that they've started to do in some of these isolated communities, isn't it? It's cut off the water, which is the essential of life, pretty
exactly,
much.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, there has been a call out to the world to stand up on behalf of Black Australia. And do you know anything about that, Cato?
A little bit. I've seen a few emails on it. I do know there's a protest in Perth on Thursday, I think tomorrow, where they're going to march in the Parliament House. The problem with us here in WA is we are such a massive state.
Yeah.
Some people it takes days to get to Perth.
Yeah.
If you don't have the resources. I mean, the miners can fly in and out, and it's usually an hour, 2 hours from anywhere in the state. But for Aboriginal people making their way from the bush to the cities, they're hard ass. And I think that's partly what the government's hoping on is the Aboriginal people are so distant and isolated that their voices will not get heard.
It was said that Abbott, when he made his comments about lifestyle and whatnot, he was supporting the Western Australian government. Is that correct?
Yes. And this is the tricky dynamics. One of the things they talk about in Australia is a thing of closing the gap. And the gap is the standard of life between Aboriginal people and the rest of the settler society.
Right.
Which, you know, all the indicators place Aboriginal people a lot lower than the rest of the settlers. The reason why there is a gap is from the 1970s onwards, the federal government was the main source of finance to support many Aboriginal communities. And so it was basically funded by the federal government. Now, at the same time, the states, state of Western Australia and others, were receiving money from the federal government to also, you know, to deliver services to all its citizens.
Yeah.
Of whom Aboriginal people also make up a portion. What the state government has done over the last 40 years is not deliver services to Aboriginal people.
But collect the money.
But keep the money and redirect it. And that's for 40 years.
For 40 years, oh my gosh. And they call us...
No one's ever called them out on it.
And they say that your lifestyle's been subsidised.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So 40 years they did that.
Yeah.
And then the federal government, now that it's in a bit of a mess financially, are looking at cutting costs. And I think some of the federal government economists are probably saying, well, we're double financing this area. On the one hand, we're giving money to the states, and on the other hand, we're funding directly.
Right. But the state,
that's
state
probably the background to where Tony Abbott's coming from, where the federal government basically said, okay, we're going to stop funding this. State government, in its wisdom, has turned around and says, oh, well, we're not funding it either.
So in terms of the white population, what is their attitude towards this particular comment by the Prime Minister?
Oh, I think right across Australia there was outrage. Apart from the rednecks who don't learn much, most normal Australians are, you know,
fair-minded,
fair go, and et cetera. And I think the problem is for most people in white Australia is they're very much aware of the money that goes in. They realise that, you know, there are billions of dollars spent in Indigenous affairs with little or no progress.
Right, yeah.
And I think part of the issue is that they don't actually know what the problem is, because it's the role of the states. The states are refusing to do the right thing and creating this gap. That's essentially what's going on. So,
yeah.
Here now, the state government benefits, takes royalties out of mining development and all these sort of projects on the traditional territory, tribal territories of Aboriginal people. And, you know, in Western Australia right now, we have a new football stadium being built in Perth. Costing about $500 million.
What?
There's a new barbecue area celebrating the visit of the Queen called Elizabeth Key, which most West Australians call Betty's Jetty, and that's a billion-dollar development.
Holy crap! So that's $1.5 billion on something that not everyone's going to have access to, I suppose.
Yeah. It's down in the city. It's down in Perth, and they basically finance it off all the raping and pillaging they do on our territories out here.
So
what it boils down to, basically. Yeah. That's the core of the story.
So just to wrap this one up, Cato, because we're running out of time, in terms of the Prime Minister and I suppose the majority population in Australia, what would your message be to them? You know, these people seem like they should be intelligent because of where they've got to, but they're acting quite ignorant in the way I'm thinking anyway.
It's the same message you guys would probably give, which is to get out of our lives, get out of our affairs, and let us run our own business. And that's essentially what the problem is all the white fellows, they all think they know what's good for all the black fellows. They control all the purse strings and the resources. So we continue to be, you know, let's put it this way, in the political area, in the activism and all of that, the social justice, we punch above our weight.
That
we don't have treaties, we don't have all those rights that are protected legally, but we're able to keep up and, you know, essentially stay on the same par with you guys or Native Americans, etc. The bit that we're not able to compete effectively on is in the economics and finance, and largely because the nation state that is Australia and the colonies that went on to become states in, like, Western Australia.
Yeah.
They control all the money, and they drip feed the Aboriginal community, and they continue to make all the decisions. And that's essentially the message that we want to say: get out of our affairs, give us back our capacity to, you know, generate our own revenue, and we will look after our own people.
That sounds pretty reasonable to me, Cato Muir. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you today, and I wish you and all your people and your mob and in Western Australia all the best of luck. We'll be thinking of you. We'll be talking to our people over here to see what whatever we can do. I mean, it's not just happening in Australia, it's happening in West Papua, and it's happening in other places around the world as well. So, but thank you very much for giving me your time and letting our listeners just get a bit of a glimpse of where you are, what it's like on the ground in Western Australia for the Indigenous people. And great to talk to you.
Just saying, I'm happy to speak to you all.
Oh, kia ora. Ngā mihi nunui ki a koe, Kato. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Kato, miwa e hika mā, an hoi anō, kia mautanu mai ki tō tātou taonga, te upoko o te ika.